Hello, I'm Paul Tyson, but known as Titch Tyson. Probably more so if you were to say Paul Tyson, probably no one would know me. Born in Broken Hill, New South Wales, and served in the army for quite a few years.
Hello, Titch. I've always known you as Titch. That's who you are to me.
That's who I am.
Thanks for coming in today. You mentioned that you were born in Broken Hill. Give us a little bit of detail about those early years in Broken Hill and how you got to join the army.
Yes, I consider myself a baby boomer, and I was born in Broken Hill in 1951, probably at the height of Broken Hill's fame and glory. And my family, of course, were involved in the mining industry. I had a grandfather who served in the First World War with a local battalion from Adelaide. And I grew up with an uncle that had just completed national service back in the 50s. So I seen a lot of military, and my uncles and godfather, and well, my godfather was awarded a military medal in the First World War. So I was brought up basically really in a defence family. And of course, during my schooling days, I found myself in the Army Cadets in Broken Hill, which I liked. And I thought, well, I like this type of life that might become a career for me. So that's what eventually did happen.
So what age were you when you joined up?
I was 17. I turned 17 in March of 1968, and by May 1968 I was undergoing recruit training at Kapooka. I was recruited into Medical Corps, the Royal Australian Army Medical Corps, and of course subsequently went on to serve with the Medical Corps in Vietnam.
Did you have a choice in joining the Medical Corps?
I guess I did. My first choice, of course, was your late husband's corps, Armoured Corps. Then Service Corps as a driver, and Medical Corps third, and I guess for reasons unknown, but to the Army, I ended up in Medical Corps.
And of course, you went on to serve in Vietnam, and perhaps you were joined into Medical Corps because we needed medics in Vietnam.
May well have been too, yep, that's exactly right. And not to say I did enjoy it. I did enjoy my medical assistance type training and subsequent other courses that we did that... We were doing driving jobs, we were doing, you know, storeman type work, doing everything, you know, to help out, taking doctors, our medical officers, bucksies, out to various locations and providing protection for them as well.
Let's talk about the role of the Medical Corps in Vietnam. When we say Vietnam, that was Vung Tau and Nui Dat.
Yeah,
they
were stationed at. They were, and in other districts and provinces too. I could see that some of the Medical Corps people were serving with training teams, with the training special forces, and we did see that. But the role of the medic, he may have been a medic in a battalion, he might have been a medic with an artillery unit, armoured unit, he could have been a medic in a hospital or a field ambulance, and he could have worked alongside our nursing sisters, along with the doctors.
And your role was a little bit broader than just being involved with the military, because you also interacted with the locals, didn't you?
We did. When I was posted to the field hospital, One Oz Field Hospital, or First Australian Field Hospital, with a call sign Vampire, which all the medical units had, and may I say that that came about at a time, also it's rumoured that there were blood donors required, and one of the units nearby, which was a transport unit, were told to go to the hospital to donate blood. And one has been heard to say, oh, the vampires want us again. So I guess that name stuck. So our call sign was Vampire. So, yes, we did have that role, and we did have a lot of our, as I said, and you asked, our hospital and the field ambulance treated not only the Australians, the Americans, the Koreans, but we treated the North Vietnamese, the South Vietnamese. And often we had road casualty victims or victims of some sort of action where they ended up in our hospital, and they were treated exactly the same right through.
Have you been back to Vietnam since those days?
Yes, I have. I have been back many times. We do have a program that I've been involved with, but I'm not doing it this year, the orphanages programs. But there's a group of touring guys from South Australia over there now, and they raise money during the year and do some work in the local orphanages. Of course, the orphanage we supported, or the task force supported when we were there, was the Barrera Orphanage. Still exists. I think it's the Catholic one or the government one, but we still support that. Yes, we do.
What a great cause. And how many children would they have there at this stage?
It varies from time to time. Usually there's at least 70 to 80, depending. And when you go there too, it could depend. They could be at school. They could be, you know, undergoing medical type things. Yeah, but usually around about 80 to 100 they have, depending on what. And there are so many orphanages over there as well.
It's a shame, isn't it? But good to know that there are orphanages to take care of them. Now, getting back to your time in Vietnam, you were actually there towards the end of Australia's involvement in Vietnam.
Yeah, that's right. I was there in 71, and during that period of time, we've seen the closure of Nui Dat, as it was back in the 60s when they pushed out from Vung Tau and went up to Nui Dat, then came back to Vung Tau, and gradually between 1971, around about October, through to about March of 72, the units were coming home. So we were in the pack-up type role, but our unit was still there providing, and I'd moved into the 8th Field Ambulance. We had the role of looking after the task force that was left there, interaction with the Americans and Koreans for medical services.
So were patients medevaced to your hospital?
Sometimes. Not so much in 72, road victims and so forth, but no, they were redirected to the American system about that time. But our doctors, we had three doctors with us in the 8th Field Ambulance, would work in the provinces, and that was our role to go out with them. They'd go out to the special training forces out on the other side of the Long Highs and work in there with them to help out when they were needed. Often a chopper would fly in and pick them up, and one of us would go with them to provide them the assistance and protection for our doctors.
And that was a system that was first introduced in Korea, wasn't it?
So I believe, yes, I believe. And the medical evacuation, which most veterans would know as dust off, started in Korea and then was refined in Vietnam. Yeah. I was right there till the end. When we left, I reckon I left on about the 29th of February 1972, being a leap year. But the people that remained after us were people down at the embassy and those that were in the training teams. But we left, some left by sea, and I flew home on what they call a champagne flight. So that was right at the end. There was no one after us, and we handed our area over when we left to the South Vietnamese. We're taking over the a task force, or as it was before, the logistics support group area at Vung Tau, where we still go to this day.
Mm. Gough Whitlam made an interesting statement about Vietnam veterans. Recite it for me.
Yeah, I wrote this down, and it was by a Sergeant Frank Alcorta, who was very heavily involved with the Battle of Long Tan, and he would have been around the place with your late husband. Frank wrote in his book that Gough had mentioned that no Vietnam coming home would be covered in glory, and that still sticks. We, of course, had the issues with our unions and others, like the posties and the wharfies, who, you know, wouldn't load our ships, wouldn't send our mail to us. So, of course, you've heard many times, and it still is around the rhetoric, punch a postie or wallop a wharfie. I guess they thought they were doing a good thing, you know, to stop the war effort, but it was not nice to not get beer and not to get letters from home. And, I guess that phrase was by Gough was, we wouldn't come home covered in glory, so... Mm. His cabinet, of course, and government treated us that way.
And that attitude reverberated through all of our troops who returned from Vietnam, didn't it? And to my surprise, it even related to the doctors.
Yes, there's some well-known books written by some well-known doctors that have mentioned that. I think Dust, Blood and Sand by Marshall Barr in Western Australia first brought that point up, that he was shunned by his colleagues when he returned to Perth. And I hear here too that happened in Adelaide, that some of the doctors found it difficult to work alongside colleagues because they were being shunned. And they've mentioned that in various books and times. But I think I mentioned, if I can say too, that we talk about things that come out of war that are good, and we talk about the aeromedical evacuation system we've mentioned. We've talked about the way that the triage systems work in hospitals, and a number of our doctors from South Australia, and just recently, if I can play tribute to Colonel Brian Cornish, it was mentioned that he came home and he worked hard in the Royal Adelaide Hospital to establish similar types of patient reception in trauma here in South Australia. A number of other doctors as well did it. I can know Don Beard, Colonel Don Beard, who was also at Capion. They worked hard to make that work, and I know they worked hard in Vietnam. Peter Burns, Rob Atkinson, Bruce Perks. They worked hard in Vietnam to make sure that the soldiers coming in off the battlefield were treated well, and any other type of person that came through our triage area were very well treated. And it's also well known that being picked up by dust off, you had 30 minutes you'd be in the triage area and probably 40 minutes you're in the theatre. And at our hospital, at One Os Field Hospital, those that came in had a 98% chance of survival. And I tell kids when I go to the school visits, out of bad things come good things, and that's what we've got, yeah.
Mm. So you came home from Vietnam. You eventually got out of the army, went back to Broken Hill, and then rejoined.
Yes, I did.
When you went back to Broken Hill, did you talk about your Vietnam experience?
Not really. We had a very, very good RSL in Broken Hill, which supported us when we were in Vietnam. And I'll mention another name over there that was a secretary, Second World War fellow by the name of Andy Dowd, who has now passed on. But, of course, he was very good mates of our great governor, Sir Eric Neill, and those type of blokes made sure we were looked after. I remember being in Vietnam and receiving packages from Broken Hill, and so did my mates that were over there. If they knew you were over there, you would sometimes get a parcel of beer, the old Southwick, and other. I remember lolly gobble bliss bombs, but those types of things arriving in the mail for us. But when we came home, the Broken Hill RSL supported us pretty well, and but most of the fellas, like myself, just got on with the job. I went to work in the mines. And I think I mentioned to you earlier, I mean, you used to see the old blokes, the Second World War blokes, catch the cage that got on the ground, still dressed in their greatcoats, you know, or you'd see one of our blokes with one of his military coat that we wore, the Field Oliver jacket, and you'd see them and you knew that they'd serve. But I think I told a story about a mate of mine that I worked with on shifts at different times. I scouted around and worked with him, and it wasn't till several years after I'd left Broken Hill and rejoined and went home for Anzac Day that I met him. Wearing his medals. It was, I never knew he was a Vietnam veteran. He probably knew I was. But there he was on Anzac Day wearing his Vietnam medal. I said to him, Bobby, where did you serve? He said, I served with the 7th Battalion, 2nd Tour. He was a national serviceman. But after the war, he just packed up, went back to work in the mine and didn't tell anyone.
And got on with life, but maybe not encouraged to talk too much about his experiences because of the stigma that was attached. But as you've said, you know, in Broken Hill, that didn't necessarily apply.
No, we're very proud of our service up there, and we still are, of course. And there are young fellas up there and young ladies too that I know that are around the place up there that have seen service in East Timor and subsequent deployments, Afghanistan, and they're getting about their business up there. They're, you know, I'm hoping they'll pick up the mantle for the RSL and advocacy up there. So, yeah, Broken Hill has a very good history of people that have served.